How you going, man?
Good, Dan. Timmy's here.
And we've also got Max Egan. I call him Max Egan, but anyway, it's Max Egan, who is making a cup of tea and has possibly had calls come through or whatever. He's a very busy man.
The guy that does the videos, the one that posts on the videos.
Yeah, that's the one.
I know. Yeah, you know, the one with the arms and the legs?
Has he got two eyes?
I think so.
The Crow House, that's the guy.
That's the one, yeah.
The Crow House, yeah, absolutely.
I've seen some shows of that. You got some very calming words.
Yeah, well, Mark posted his latest film in the Thought Academy, which was very good. I think it's his best yet.
Yeah, I reckon it definitely is too, but like, I'd love to know whether or not Max actually had anyone help him with the project, because it's, you know, Transformation, the movie, is such an epic production, and I know a lot of work goes into it. So, like, I'm pretty sure Max is a one-man show most of the time, but I really do think that, you know, there was possibly other people that did help him with regards to certain aspects of the film. And the other thing I was really interested to find out was whether or not Max actually scripts everything first and then reads from it, or whether he does like the monologue and then adds the photos, or he adds the photos first and then does the monologue to the photos and the video images and that type of thing. Because, like, when he does talk, he's very natural.
Right.
Hey, I'm back, guys.
Hey, Max.
Sorry about that.
No, it's all good, brother. We were just talking about the new film.
Okay. Yeah.
And I have a question for you, and that is,
Would you want to? Are we starting the show recording, or?
Yeah.
Well, do you want to just save things for the recording, or are you going to do an intro, or you're going to do that later, or?
We kind of have the conversation so that it's really organic. I guess you could probably say it's really loose.
Okay.
Yeah, we, like,
we
to
just
keep
talk,
it
and then Mark edits it and takes out all our swear words and cursing words and all our coughing and sneezing, and then makes it sound like we're really smart.
Well, that's good. He might be able to do that for me.
I enjoyed your YouTube page, Mr. Egan. Very interesting. Very nice words.
Thank you very much.
And Mark was just talking about whether you record all the audio and then put images to it, or you talk through the images while you're watching it, or how do you do your movies?
Some parts I'll script, some parts I won't. I mean, I'll write a loose script, but I don't ever really stick to it. Sometimes I'll just write bullet points, and I'll just talk about them and edit out the bits where I fluff it or go off on some tangent that doesn't hold any relative necessity for the movie. So I just sort of make the script up as I go along, really, just sort of read through it all. I get all the audio down first. Sometimes if I'm doing it in sections, like with the last film, Transformation, I did in four sections, so I recorded the script in four sections. And then once I've recorded the script, I will add the background music to it. And once I've got the background music there, I'll chop the script up a little bit. And if you listen to some of the earlier films I've done, you'll notice that where I come in on sentences or stress words, they will be on the beat of the soundtrack. So it's almost like listening to rap.
Yeah.
I do that because it sinks in better. If you've got the music there, why not be? And because I'm a musician as well, I just sort of think that way.
It's a tapping, thumping kind of motion.
Well, it's not really thumping, but you know, I don't have a lot of drums in soundtracks. I mean, I do in some parts, but with all of my films, if you listen to it, you'll find that the vocals actually go in time with the music. Because I'm a musician and that's just what I do. And I think it works better if I do it that way. It gives it more emphasis and it makes it easier for people to understand. And then once I've got...
But are you watching it while you're recording, Max? Are you watching the film while you're recording it and getting...
No, I do all that later. Once I've recorded the script and then I've added it to the music and I've got the timings there and I've got the background music, then I see in my head what needs to go there. Once I've got the music going to, see, this is why I put music in my films. A lot of people say, oh, this is important information. Why have you got background music in it? You know, it's annoying with the background music. You know, well, sorry, but I'm a musician and that's just how I work.
Sure.
You know, so once I've got the vocals down, like the, not vocals, but the narration down, and I've got the background music going with it, then the movie starts rolling in my head and I just create it from there. And I add all the visuals after I've done all the audio.
You know, when you're actually bringing in music, say, for example, like to fit in with a monologue that you've written, have you ever found, because like I make videos as well, and one thing I find, you know, sometimes you'll bring music in to fit with like a piece of video or, you know, some type of monologue and it'll just fit perfectly. You know, like, for example, someone might send you a piece of music just randomly out of the blue and you'll have pre-recorded a monologue earlier, and then you'll put that music with your monologue and find that it just fits beautifully. You know what I mean? It just absolutely fits perfectly, even though you've had very little editing done to it. You know?
Yeah, sometimes I find that, and some of the tracks I write myself, and I'll write specifically for the length of what I've said, and I'll put a change in. You know, when I make a certain point, I'll do a chord change or a key change, something like that, because I know, you know, sometimes I can just import the vocals into a program like Fruity Loops, for example.
Yeah.
And I can write the soundtrack in Fruity Loops while I'm listening, so I can get the timings right and the chord changes right. And when I use other people's music, I kind of usually listen to it a lot before I record the narration, so I know where the changes are going to be, and I'll structure it that way, because I'll be, you know, writing out a script or something, and I'll be listening to that track while I'm doing it, so I can see about how long it's going to take and where I'm going to get to. So you can kind of work it out, and I kind of enjoy that part because I've spent most of my life as a musician, so that's why I've always got background music in the films, and the background music always kind of tells the story as much as what the narration and the visuals do. I'll try to keep it that way anyway, because I think music's important in films, just to get your point across. It sets the mood for what you're trying to say, and it helps convey the message a lot easier.
Max, I must say, this is Dan in Vancouver, Washington. Not being a musician, what you just told me has always been critical to me, because things always mean more to me. Both the spoken word and this word that is sung means more to me with the proper music that accompanies it.
Oh, Magic has joined us.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, not too bad. Just letting you know who's on the panel today. We've got Dan in Vancouver, Washington. We have Timmer in Chicago, Illinois. We have Andre in Brisbane, Queensland. And we also have Max in Byron Bay, New South Wales.
Ah, it's an honor, Max. Hello, everybody.
Pleased to meet you.
So, Magic, we're basically talking about Max's new film, Transformation. And one of the questions that I actually had for you, Max, was when you were making the film, I noticed that there was some footage that was used, well, at least in one film that I saw, which was Home, which I highly recommend everyone see. But my question was, is when you're using other people's, you know, copyrighted material and that type of thing, do you find that your movies get blocked in certain countries? Like, does YouTube, you know, come down on you in a big way, or do you find that YouTube are a little bit more friendlier towards you?
No, they're very unfriendly, actually. But you can use a certain amount of footage out of just about anything, as long as you only use a few seconds of it. And if you use it in a collage, that's a lot more acceptable as far as copyrights go. But I put a disclaimer at the start of the film. I put the link to the copyright legislation so they can go and read it. The film is made not for profit. I don't receive anything for what I do. I give it all away. So, you know, if they want to sue me, well, good luck with that. I don't own anything, you know. And at the end of the film, I list every single piece of video footage that I used. I list all the films and movie clips or songs or news stations that I got everything from. So ultimately, all I'm doing is promoting their work anyway.
Precisely.
And if any of them decide to make a fuss and want to take me to court or anything like that, well, that's fine. I'm happy to do that. But like I said, I don't make anything from it. And all I'm doing is promoting their work. I'm using it in the interest of the public good. And as I said at the end of the film, if I used your work in this production, it's because it's the best. So I'm complimenting them and I'm promoting their work. I'm fully listing everything. I've listed the appropriate copyright legislation. So I have no problem in using stuff from other sources. And a lot of the music that I use, like there's bands like Cohen, which are, I think they might be Japanese. Don't quote me on that. But they openly say, hey, anybody who wants to use our music, go ahead and use it. So I do that. Some of the music I got from free sites online where you can download free soundtrack music. Some of it was written for me by members of my forums and YouTube people. I put out on a radio show that I was interested in using backup music if anyone had anything to offer. And I got dozens and dozens of submissions of background music, like a real lot. I've probably got enough background music there to do another 5 films.
Nice.
Out of what I've got, just that people sent me.
Yeah.
And you know, the ones that did send me music, I'd like, you know, I like that bit, but I don't like where the piano comes in there because it's too loud because it interferes with the vocal. So I'd just edit their bits and I'd mix them all up together and I'd sort of create my own kind of thing out of it, or just use some pieces straight out as they were sent to me as well. And I put all the pieces that I used, all the composers, I put them all in the credits. And as far as anyone helping me with the film, well, there was a guy called Chris Velrath who made a little piece of animation for me in the middle of the second section. I sent him the completed audio track with the soundtrack behind it. And I said, well, I want a school sort of sequence where all this stuff's going on. I sent him a couple of clips to use for reference and said, you know, I want it to end up looking like a human brain. And he made me that section. And I had another guy on YouTube called Sentient Mind who made the titles for me that are made out of that sand that sort of blows away. And the rest of it I did myself. So it took me about 18 months to put it all together. But of course I'm doing radio shows at the same time and making film clips for that. And I've got all this other stuff going on here and meetings and all the stuff. So it isn't that I sat down and worked on the film solidly for 18 months. I don't know how long it would have taken me actually in hours, but yeah, it was pretty well a one-man show. I mean, the whole thing's a one-man show. The Crow House is a one-man show. The YouTube channel, all the video clips that I make out of the radio shows, the films, it's all a one-man show. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's fun. But it's kind of like art for me. I mean, I've always spent my life as an artist. When I was a kid, I used to draw all the time. I used to paint, get jobs painting, sell artwork on the street. And then I became a musician and I made my life playing guitar. That was my livelihood. And that's kind of like art. You're just painting a picture, only it's an audio picture. And then I sort of got a bit old and gray. So I moved back from the music to filmmaking, which is another form of art. And it's all really the same thing when you think about it. It's all just art. And that's why the films sort of come across as a little bit arty the way I do them, I suppose, because hey, I only ultimately really do them for me visually. You know, I just do stuff that I'd like to see and I try to make it interesting enough to bring the viewer in so they're going to want to watch the whole thing because it's got information that they need. So that's kind of how I go about it.
Max, I may intercede. You touched a nerve with me. May I inquire as to your age?
My age is 54.
Still a pup. I'm 67.
Okay. Yeah, 54 years young. It's funny, you know, I figured out a long time ago you never actually really grow up. Your body just sort of gets old.
Well, my daughter tells me that I'm 67 going on 30, and she asked me when I was going to grow up, and I said, never, there's no future in it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, you never grow up. I remember when I was a kid, I used to think that my parents were these like oracles, you know. Wow, they just know everything because they're grown up, you know. And as you go through life and you get older and older and you think, I wonder when that moment is when I'm actually a grown up. It's like, right. Is a switch going to flick one day? Am I going to wake up tomorrow and go, hey, I feel like I'm an adult now, you know? And then I got to about 40 or 45 and I'm thinking, wait, it never actually happens, you know?
No, I'm not there yet.
And then I go, wow, my parents weren't these oracles at all. They were as messed up as everybody else, you know? Nobody ever grows up. Your body just gets wrinkled. That's what happens. You get to a certain height and then you start shrinking again, but you never grow up.
I don't know what happened to me, but I don't have any wrinkles yet, so I'm lucky as hell there. And I'm not gray yet either.
Yeah, but it's weird, you know, the moment you realize that you never actually grow up.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I'm vain as hell.
So, Magic.
Yeah.
Did you want to tell us where you're currently located at?
I'm in Des Moines, Iowa.
And did you want to tell Max a little bit what you do on YouTube with regards to your climate reports?
Oh, what I'm doing on YouTube, well, it all started out, I was just doing some news reports for some personal friends that I have here in town, and it just kind of took off from there. I had no idea the strength of YouTube when I began this. So I do a climate change update just about every day, four times a week. And I cover natural disasters, the Fukushima incident, BP oil spill. That's what got me started, really. And I don't know. I just do what I do and kind of let it go.
Okay, yeah, YouTube, the power of YouTube is amazing. It absolutely is. I've been talking to people for 30 years about the global situation. And when 9/11 happened, I started hitting chat rooms and forums and Yahoo News boards and all this sort of stuff, and I was just getting...
I've been listening to you for over 10 years, Max.
I've been putting page-long debates and stuff on Yahoo forums and stuff, and then I discovered YouTube in 2008. I discovered YouTube, and it just skyrocketed from there. I thought it was just a place where high school kids uploaded their videos, you know, and then I found there was this whole truth movement on there, and I saw someone had just put together a slideshow with them talking over it about an event, and I went, hey, I can do that. You know, I know all this stuff, and I can put together a slideshow and show people what's going on. And because I'm kind of arty, I kind of made it kind of like a film. And that was the big picture that I released in 2008. And that was the first thing that I ever did on YouTube, you know, and it reached a lot of people, and that got me sort of where I am. It got me the radio show and all sorts of stuff. So it's absolutely amazing, really, the power of YouTube. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, it always amazes me.
So when did you join YouTube Magic?
I joined about 3 years ago. I didn't start making videos till 2 years ago, right after the BP disaster. I just wasn't finding any reports on the stories I was finding, so I decided to put out a little new story of my own, and it just kind of took off.
A lot of people I know really, really like your updates, like they can't get by without them in some cases. And I think with today's mainstream, or should I say lamestream media, not reporting on the, you know, the things that are important, I think that your update is vital in our society because, you know, it's a service that we really, really, really need. And like I said, they love it.
Yeah, a lot of people tell me that. I don't edit my videos. They're all raw, one shot, one take. And I kind of do that for a reason, to kind of let everybody else know it's very easy to do this. And if more people would just put up videos and get the word out, it doesn't matter if 500 people put out the same story. That will have an effect on YouTube as a whole, and instead of, you know, 2-3 dozen of us putting out stories kind of thing. Just fact, the sheer volume.
What? May I inquire as to your view on global warming?
Mine? climate change? Are we calling climate it global change. Warming now or climate change?
Both. Climate change.
They kind climate of change. Change it. Well, the climate's changing. It's been doing that for about 4.6 billion years, I think.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We'll continue to change. That's what climates do. Anthropogenic climate change, I don't necessarily agree that we're responsible for it, although I say we are making a fair bit of difference to it now with all the geoengineering that they're doing to, in attempt to prevent it, or at least that's what they tell us it's for.
Right.
The steps that we seem to be taking to apparently deal with climate change, which I think have a completely different agenda in mind, but the steps that we are apparently taking to deal with it seem to be making matters a good deal worse.
I would agree.
It's just a power control grab by the powers that be, of course.
Absolutely.
The whole reason I called my show Climate Change Update is because that's what they used the term. That was the key term. So I wanted to pick the name of a show where it'd be easy for people to Google me in, you know?
Yeah.
Easy to remember kind of thing. Because everybody hears climate change, climate change, climate change. And I'll tell you straight up, it's a scam. You know, that's just one way for them to get money from you to what? Reduce carbon emissions?
Well,
how many volcanoes are going off right now?
Right. I'm one of those freaky Americans who don't buy the global warming crap because I have the intellect to realize that our climate has been changing, as Max said, for 4 billion years. And it's going to change again.
Yeah, since time began. Yep.
And again.
I agree.
Yeah, it's a complete scam. And you've even got the report from Iron Mountain that talked about how they're going to use this type of thing.
I mean,
that's the report that got me all started.
Yeah, I mean, that came out in like 66 or something. I mean, a long, long time ago. 61.
Yeah, I know.
Sooner or later, man is not going to choose his own end. When Mother Earth decides to get rid of us, she's going to do it.
Well, yeah, that's definitely true.
Hello, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Scarecrow, you just said that's what they say they're doing when you were talking about fracking or sonar graphing or whatever they're doing right now. Do you remember saying that's what they say they're doing? What do you think the government's doing? What are they planning?
With the geoengineering and climate remediation.
Yeah, the geoengineering. Well, that's
what we're talking about is chemtrails.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they say they're doing it in order to, reduce the amount of sunlight hitting the earth and protect us from climate change and all sorts of stuff like that. But when you really do an analysis of what's actually in the spraying, you're finding barium, strontium, aluminium, and what we seem to be finding are nanoparticulates as well. I mean, if you've heard of Morgellons syndrome, what you see exhibited in Morgellons syndrome, these fibers and very, very bizarre things coming out of people. And they're also finding little plaque-like structures and grooved metallic-type devices and all sorts of stuff coming out with this Morgellons. What you find is you can grow culture from people that don't have Morgellons or don't exhibit any signs of Morgellons, and you can grow these same fibers. So they appear to be in everything. And there's a man called Clifford Carnicom who got some atmosphere samples from a high altitude on a mountain in New Mexico. And he got those atmosphere samples and he cultured them and he grew the same fibers out of the atmosphere samples. So that would suggest that these things are coming down to the chemtrails. So I think chemtrails are a multi-platform delivery system. I think the metallic salts that they use create a flux in the air, and like an electromagnetic flux that can be used for HAARP transmissions. You find that everything now is conductive. The air is not neutral anymore. It's very, very conductive. We're much more conductive than we were. All the plants, everything. All these salts and fibers and nanoparticulates and barium and strontium and aluminium, and it's in everything. It's in all the water. It's in the soil. It's in the trees. It's in everything because they've been spraying globally. So I think that there's a massive genetic manipulation going on this planet. I think all life on this planet has been genetically altered. Well, it seems to be transhumanism. This seems to be what the transhuman agenda is to basically merge man with machine. But if you're going to merge man with machine, people, you know, we've been presented shows like the Star Trek, you know, the Borg and all this sort of stuff. So people think of plantons and all these eye things and pieces that people add to their bodies, microchips and all this sort of stuff. But what if they were going to merge man with machine from the inside out by changing our genetic structure? Merging our DNA with GNA, which is the nanotechnology building block. It's the chemical cousin of DNA.
Yep, through vaccines and the water and the air and all that. But aluminium in the air is not a bad thing because it reflects the sun rays.
Well, aluminium is also a toxic heavy metal. It's also killing the soil and making it's becoming a necessity soon, or it will become a necessity to grow Monsanto aluminium resistant seeds, because that's going to be the only thing that will grow. We're seeing trees dying. We're seeing a massive amount of degeneration of the basic ecology on the planet because of the amount of aluminium in the air. And I don't think anthropogenic climate change is an issue. I really don't. I don't think we need to spray aluminium in the air to reflect the sun. I think we need to stop all the pollutive industries that we use, all the major corporate industries, the oil industry, the coal industry, coal seam gas mining, all this stuff that we do to meet our energy needs. And we need to adopt something like what Justin Hall is working on. Justin Hall Tipping, a film made of carbon, you know, our deadly enemy carbon, which is actually our salvation, which you can make a film out of this stuff. You can put it on your window, attach a polymer to it, and you can create energy from light. And they're working on that. I mean, we don't need any of the stuff that we do to meet our energy needs. These are all the most pollutive industries in the planet. If you started letting people look into alternative energy technology and legalize plants such as hemp, so that we weren't killing our forests and weren't dependent on big pharma and weren't destroying trees for paper and all the stuff that we're doing, growing massive amounts of cotton, which is incredibly pollutive. We could use hemp, which is, you know, if they legalized hemp, you'd immediately close down like three or four of the most pollutive industries on earth, because hemp will do a better job of all of these things. I mean, there's so many things we could do to change the direction that this society is going in, direction our civilization is going in, and spraying aluminium in the air just to combat the light, I mean, that's just compounding the problem. You know, you need to fix the problem from its root, and the root is the system itself. You know, that's what we need to address, and the only people who are going to address it is the people. We can't expect the politicians to do it. They're the ones who created all this mess. You know, we've forgotten where they sit in the social structure. The politicians are our servants. We actually employ these people to do what we want. We employ them to make sure we have a viable future. And I'd say they've done a hell of a bad job at it, and they're all in breach of trust, and they need to be replaced with people who are going to do the job properly. Or perhaps we could just do the job ourselves. You know, have a reinstatement of natural law, and just start respecting each other, seeing each other as valid, realize that we're all in this together, and we could do wonderful things. And ultimately, it all comes down to that. It comes down to the individual changing their perspective. You know, but people just fail to look at the whole thing holistically. They really do. It's always pointing the finger, and it's finding a fix for a problem that we've created, rather than addressing the actual problem itself.
Well, whenever you address these problems, most of the people are keeping one eye on the stock market.
Well, you know, that's like, a fiction. Yeah. It's fiction.
It's all about the money in the pocket.
They're gambling.
It's fiction. People, you know, they're worried about the economy. I say, look, the economy's fiction. They go, no, it's real. I say, really? Could you bring it round to my house? I'd like to look at it, see what shape it is. I'd like to see what it smells like. I want to poke it with my finger and see what it feels like. Oh, I can't do that. I said, no, of course you can't do that, because it doesn't exist. It's fiction. It's just this idea that somebody had, and we're sacrificing everything of any value on the planet in order to balance these books and to create an economy of permanent growth. How can you have an economy based in permanent growth on a planet with finite resources when everything becomes expendable in order to serve the economy? It's absurd.
Money is fiction.
Well, yeah, we need something to pass around to each other to perform commerce. You know, if you've got something that I want and I've got to give you some shells for it or something so you can pass some shells to Andre, you know.
Why, I do something for you, you do something for me. We don't have...
I like shells.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think...
Back to the barter
system. But a lot of people do. It'd be very, very hard to eliminate money from the current system that we have. It'd have to be a gradual... It'd have to be a gradual transition. We need people to understand what money is. Money is simply a talisman for control. It's designed to keep people in scarcity.
Exactly. You know,
but the money system that we've got, that's the problem, and I don't even want to go into that. No. But the money system that we got is so misunderstood.
It's designed
to extract everything of value from the planet and transfer it into the hands of those who issue the currency, who control the paper, you know? And the paper is just paper, you know? I mean, that's all it is.
It's not even paper anymore. It's just zeros on a computer screen.
Well, yeah, it's getting even worse. I mean, the banks shouldn't even be involved in money because we don't need the banks because we create all the money ourselves. All the banks do is trick us into thinking that they created it and they trick us into giving it all to them. You know, that's the only purpose of banks. No one ever borrowed anything. A bank never lent anything to anybody, not one single cent. All they did was they stole all the money that everybody else created. That's all banks are for, you know. And because they issue the paper or they control the ones and zeros on your screen, it's a scam. It's such a scam. Not only do they steal everything that everybody creates, but they charge interest for doing it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
it's just a scam.
Insane.
It's an absolute scam. I mean, the money system is the most misunderstood thing on the planet. We need to fix that. There's a guy called Mike Montagna who's got a thing called Mathematically Perfected Economy, and that would work. You know, we could use that for a few generations and then maybe phase it out altogether, you know, because I don't think we need this stuff. But, of course, the people, you know, these left-brain people that think the economy is real, they're going to need something. You know, they're not going to be easy to the transition. So introduce Mathematically Perfected Economy so everything just runs smoothly. There's no inflation, no deflation. Everything maintains its value for the life of the object or the product, you know, and then it's retired. It's a great system.
With regards to the whole change in the world and making the world a better place, like you've got a list of so many things that need to be done. You even touched on a few of these things today that people are talking about left, right, and center with regards to hemp and also with regards to the corruption that's in the world. The question is, how do you see it all unfolding? I mean, do you see things getting better with regards to, are we going to see, say, the eugenics program roll out even faster, or are we going to see people turn around and say, no, you guys are supposed to be serving us?
Well, you know, it depends on the people. People need to occupy themselves. People need to know who and what they are. This is what I've tried to do on all my shows and all my films. I've tried to present a different perspective of reality. You know, in my film, The Awakening, I really tried to show people how reality works, because once you understand how it works, you lose all the fear. And there's been enough stuff come out since then about, you know, the free man movement and all of this sort of stuff. And with the whole free man movement, people that watch this stuff, they've got to understand this is a learning process for everybody. And that's why it's been evolving and changing all the way through. It's something that you heard 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah, it's gone a little bit further than that now. And you're hearing new things all the time. But really it's about people changing their perspective of reality and always standing in natural law, knowing the difference between legislation and law, you know, what is legislated and what is lawful, what is legal and what is lawful, you know, because people are tricked into thinking legislation's law when all legislation does is superimpose itself over law. And if a law's been broken, then there's an injured party. And there's an injured party in everything this government does and everything that supports this economy, there's injured parties in the whole lot. And we're going to change things once we realize that. And once we respect each other, realize that we are community. We are all community together. And community means common unity. And we've been, we don't have that in our community because of this government imposed system that's been put over us. And then all this stuff's been legislated to make almost everything a crime. It's very difficult to actually be a human being anymore. Because, you know, if you step out of line here or cross the road there, you've broken some law. And it's not law, it's legislation. It's like me telling you, you can only walk on the left-hand side of your kitchen. And if you cross on the right-hand side, you're going to have to pay me $5. You know? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. There's no injured party for any of this statute regulation. And when they want to commit a crime or rape the environment or take away some of your rights, they just write it down on a piece of paper and say, look, now it's law. So now you have to do this. But, well, hang on, it's not law. It's just, you know, you wrote it down. And, you know, I don't agree with that being law, so I'm going to get the police to arrest you. And they say, well, you can't because I wrote on this other piece of paper that I can't be arrested. You know, look, it's got a little fancy letterhead and a government stamp on it, so it must be law. You know, it's ridiculous. We've got a group of public servants who we employ to make sure we have a viable future, and all they do when they get in office is write all these things down on pieces of paper designed to control us. And we just go, oh, okay, it must be law. It's not law, it's legislation. And it's designed to remove natural law from the planet. So we have to realize that this is our planet. And it doesn't matter what legislation has been put in place that allows certain corporate interests to destroy the planet. We have a moral obligation and a lawful obligation to prevent this from happening. Because this is our planet. And these people will keep going until the Earth looks like the moon. You know, they'll keep going until it's a barren wasteland void of all life. And then they'll sit down and they'll say, oh my God, we need to find a new planet to exploit. Because I still have to pay off my bill to the bank. Exactly. It's insane, but you understand, these people are insane, they are psychopathic, and they're insane, and they get away with it because we let them. So that will determine the change, whether we decide that we're not going to let them anymore and peacefully turn away from the system, because we don't have to fight it. All we've got to do is turn away from it, but in order to do that, we have to respect each other. So, I just wanted to finish that bit.
I think one of the things that we are accomplishing right now, for example, the den started, what, Mark, with 3 people? Tonight we have 5. Maybe we'll have 6. Maybe we'll have 8. Maybe we'll have 10, whatever. When we have 1,000 dens, all with different constructs, and then 1,000,000 dens, then we will be able to make a change. But until people like us sit down and exchange positive views, nothing will change. We're the ones that have to do it.
I think everyone has to do it. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where if you look at it, like you were just saying that there were psychopaths running the show and essentially creating these legislations that really aren't worth the paper they're written on. But then you have to ask yourself the question, are the people who are falling for this even crazier? You know, like, where do we sit on the crazy scale? Like, they're crazy telling us to do these things, but then aren't we just as crazy allowing them to get away with it? You know, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, we're trained to do this. You see, people are trained to think this way. See, when you've got psychopaths that run a nation or run a company, you've got psychopaths who are the CEOs of major corporations or are the heads of countries, then their morality, their view of the world, their worldview and their morality becomes the morality of the people over which they preside. This is why you'll have a police officer throwing someone out of a house and saying, look, I feel terrible that I've got to throw you out on the street, but I have no choice. I have to do it because it says on this piece of paper that this psychopath wrote down that I have to do it. You know what I'm saying? It affects the mind like a pathogen when you start putting the system ahead of the needs of the people, and yet the people created society and society created the system to serve the needs of the people. So, but within the system, the most expendable thing within its parameters are the people. So it's a psychopathic system. And people do this because they've been trained to do it. They've been trained to think that way. So you've got to put it all in perspective. It's very difficult to blame people, but it's just the way they've been trained to act. You know, it's like I said, it's like a pathogen, and you have to be aware that it's there and aware that this exists in order to free yourself from this pathological thinking. That's the only way to free yourself from it. You've got to be aware of its existence.
But conversations like this is what gets it all started.
Well, yeah, it is, but it's just a new way of for people to look at things, you know. They've got to understand what's going on here. And it is quite literally a psychopathic system. It's created by psychopaths. They don't care about people. I mean, could you order the carpet bombing of Baghdad? Could you drop depleted uranium all over Iraq and poison the place for the next 4.5 billion years? Well, actually, that's only its half-life of depleted uranium. 4.5 billion exactly. years. So it's forever. You know, Afghanistan, Iraq, the ladies over there, 30,000 nurses have quit their jobs in Iraq because they're scared of being there when a baby's delivered because they don't know what's going to come out.
Right.
You know, and this is getting worse and worse and worse and worse, and you will never be able to live in that area. ever again. And not only that, but they're sending, you know, our governments are sending our own troops over there to receive radiation sickness and come home and give it to their families and children. They don't care. You know, you couldn't do that unless you're a psychopath.
Well,
you know,
Max,
all of the wars of conflict that have been fought, these are all wars for resources, and they're all fought by psychopathic means using weapons of mass destruction because we have a psychopathic system. And like I said, the only way to inoculate yourself to it is to be aware of it.
I can't be more aware of it. I used to work for them.
Well, yeah, yeah.
I did. I used to work for psychopaths in Washington, D.C.
Well, it's just the system itself. I mean, even you know, anybody being expendable in order to serve an economy, you know, an economic model, that's ridiculous, you know. But people do it because they have to. It's called being a good worker, being a conscientious worker. If you're a conscientious worker, you will do everything it says on this little piece of paper, you know. And we've got this paper-based reality, and it's not reality. It's this psychopathic system. But it's all left brain, left brain, left brain. And if you do obey what's written on this piece of paper, we'll give you more money, and you can climb higher up the social ladder, and you'll have more stuff than the guy next door. So that means you'll be a better person, you know. It's amazing, but it's pathological thinking, and it's instilled into people since birth. People are trained to think pathologically. So as soon as you're born, you're learning this subliminally off your parents and siblings. Then you go to school and you're trained to think like this through school. And not only that, you're graded through school. The whole concept of grading kids in order to educate them. Oh, you didn't regurgitate what I told you to regurgitate out of this book. So you're a C-class person.
Right.
You know, and this person, he did regurgitate on command, so he's an A-class person. Hey, everyone, look at the C-class person. Let's make fun of him. And you're going to take this report card home, and your parents aren't going to like you. Your friends are going to look down on you because you're only a C-grade person. You know, it's demeaning. It's absolutely demeaning. And so it's done all the way through school. You know, school doesn't teach kids to be creative. It doesn't teach them to use their mind. It teaches them to fit within the parameters of a certain system. And don't think outside the box. That's all it does.
It just seems to me that we're trapped. I mean, where do we go? It seems the same question that people always ask is, where do we go? What do we do? How do we change things? Like, you can start on a local level by getting to know your local representative and doing everything in your power to hassle them, or at the very least making sure they actually do their job. But, you know, it just seems to me that there are very few avenues that people can go down. Like, the ones that have either partially woken up or are actually starting to question what's going on. Like, you know, you've got so much disinformation out there as well as true information out there. And you also have people saying that, you know, this is too much for me. I'm going back to the mainstream media because there's too much infighting in the truth movement, too much division. And it just seems to me that, as I say, you shouldn't be looking at all the problems of the world. You should be looking at the source of all the problems. When you can reach out to that level, but the only problem is how do you as an individual make a difference? If you're not creative and you don't have the ability to do things that other people can do, how do you change the situation? Like, how do you help steer the Titanic away from the iceberg?
Civil disobedience. Civil disobedience, leading by example.
You know, non-compliance.
Leading by example, non-compliance, civil disobedience. If they enact legislation which removes some of your rights, the first thing you should do is break that legislation as publicly as possible. And if you're taken to court over it, then you need to know who you are in order to deal with the court system. And I've gone through that on a myriad of shows. And there's a lot of people out there that are talking about trust law and ways you can deal with the court system. You know, but you know, in New Zealand, for example, they've brought in legislation. I don't know whether they have brought it in yet, but they're talking about it. Legislation that says you're not allowed to share food with your neighbours. All food's got to be FDA approved. $50,000 fine if you share, you know, a tomato with your neighbors. Everybody immediately needs to start growing gardens and sharing food. The whole country, everybody, right? They brought in a law in England that if you put your wheelie bin out on the wrong day, you get a £20 fine or something, you know?
So everyone needs to do that here in the States too.
Everybody needs to put their wheelie bins out 7 days a week, the whole country, and don't pay the fine.
I think one of the big things here in Australia is the fact that if you don't vote, you actually have to pay a fine. Which seems crazy. In other countries, it's classified as a no vote, but in here, in Australia, you get a $20 fine.
Whoa.
Well, the thing is, really? in America, they've got a different voting system to what we've got here in Australia. It actually makes a difference if you vote in America, because there is just the off chance that you may get a good candidate to vote for. But in Australia, it doesn't matter. You got one party or the other, and you got all these little independents who ultimately give their votes to one of the big parties.
Yeah, preference votes completely takes away democratic freedom.
So what you've got in Australia is a rotational, functional dictatorship. You just elect
a new
side of the coin. and it's a new CEO for the corporation. That's all it is. You're electing a new dictator every few years, and they give you two parties to choose from, who both have ultimately the same agenda, because it gives you the illusion that you're choosing and that you're making a difference, you know?
We have the same thing here, Max. We have
one. Well, yeah, you do. Republicans or Democrats, it's theater.
Since Eisenhower.
It's just theater for the masses.
What we need in the White House is Ron Paul.
Well, Ron Paul's probably a good start. I mean,
Did you know he was a 33-degree Mason?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't think he'll solve anything. He might be the one who can stop the war in Iraq, but ultimately I think Ron Paul's just, I mean, the whole system's corrupt. You can't do anything from within the parameters of that system. What we need is mass civil disobedience and a return to natural law. But, you know, you've got to have the power of community behind you to do this.
Right.
You know? So you've got to get to know your neighbors. Break down these barriers with people. They're just like you. What's to fear? Why are we all in fear of each other? Oh, because they got more stuff than you, or they don't look the right way, or they smell different to you, or they got a different skin color. Whatever rubbish we've concocted that we've been trained to think puts this wall of division with people, and oh, they might be criminals. Well, where's all the crime come from? It's because people are in a state of scarcity. They're kept in a state of scarcity via this money system, so they commit crime in order to have the amount of stuff that they believe they need, which makes them a real person, because according to the television, you've got to have this much stuff to even be a real person. I mean, it's just ridiculous, this mindset, this pathological mindset that's been instilled into everybody. Now, take the interest off the money system straight away, and there's most of your problems solved. Introduce an honest financial system, get everybody out of a state of permanent scarcity, and there's most of the problems solved. Cancel all debt immediately. Everybody just cancel all debt and start again from here.
I have no fear, and I'm not paranoid, but I'm one of those people in this country who's on a watch list.
As am I.
Not a no-fly list, but I'm on a watch list.
Oh, I think that I'm probably on that list as well, brother.
Surprise me. So from the conversation, the government believes that the mass, the people, are stupid and consumerist, that we don't have much choice in matters, and they take decisions into their own hands. You've got a two-party system, so we don't have much choice. But at the same time, the government has varying info from different departments, like all their funded research and all their funded stuff. Yeah? Do you agree so far?
Yes.
Yeah? And then they also have secret files that are too complicated for us stupid people that live in the streets, and they've got it hidden for 20 years. No one can look at them for 20 years because they're confidential. So my question is, are the governments around the world, which are in link, like the Western society government and the other governments, are they stupid, money-hungry dictators, or do they have information that we don't know about and are preparing for the predicted upcoming changes? You know, whether it's the Incas or the Mayans or the Egyptians. I want to know.
A little bit of both.
They're brilliant, money-hungry assholes.
Arrogant and pompous leaders? No, never.
No.
You know, it goes up. It's a kind of a pyramid thing. Those at the top have a lot of very, very ancient information, a lot of the old knowledge of how the pyramids were built, a lot of the knowledge of pre-civilizations that existed here. You'll find most of that stuff's probably in the Vatican vaults, most global leaders are small fry. They're puppets. Anybody who's in the public eye isn't really a big fish. You know what I mean? Isn't really a big fish. It goes right up the food chain. I mean, there could be some sort of celestial event coming. I mean, I don't really worry with celestial events too much, because they're celestial events, and no matter what I do, I can't do anything about that. If I'm supposed to survive this celestial event, I'm sure that spirit or source or whatever you want to call it, God, whatever you want to call it, will assure that I'm in the right place at the right time to do what I'm supposed to do. I have no fear of death or anything like that, so I don't really deal with celestial events.
So if the government kills a president that is trying to change certain things on the government, or release information like JFK said a few things about Area 51 or about his secret files from the finding of something, of Roswell or something, and then he got killed a week later. other presidents from around the country, I can name, like President Menem, his son was killed and his politics changed 180 degrees, like he just totally flipped what he was doing because of the pressure. So there's something behind the government. If the governments are just puppets, who are the puppet masters?
Well, the world's run by three city states, the Vatican and London and District of Columbia, basically. That's how it's all done. The Center for Spiritual Control, Monetary Control, and Military Control. That's how it's all run. Who ultimately they are is a very interesting question. I mean, all you can really do is speculate. And what I've tried to say to people is that we need to know that they exist, whoever they are, because this system is far too intelligent and far too well constructed for it not to have been purposely put together.
Right.
But rather than trying to go down all these rabbit holes to find who we can ultimately point the finger at, what we need to do is realize that we have a problem and focus on what the solution is to the problem, because once we implement the solution, who they are will become apparent by default, you know? So we've really got to focus on solutions, I believe. That should be the main focus of all alternate research. And even if you're presenting a problem to people, you've got to at least try to provide some sort of pathway to solution, because otherwise, you know, you're just freaking people out. You're giving them another rabbit hole to go down, and nothing's getting accomplished. No one's taking self-responsibility and applying themselves to the world around them, because, you know, we need to apply ourselves to the world around us. We need to lead by example and stand in the power of what we inherently are. That's how we change everything.
I think you hit up earlier, Max, when you said civil disobedience. If we could get civil disobedience on a planet scale, we could change it all.
Well, I live it every day. I mean, I live my life that way. I've never participated in the system. I've been taken to court a number of times. I've always walked out a free person. And I just don't comply with anything they want me to comply with. If what they ask me to comply with does not sit with natural law or contravenes natural law, I just have a series of questions that I go through, and I talk to these people, and I'm always sure to stand in who I am. I'm a natural man of flesh and blood, you know, and I stand in that. And with the right questions, they always just dismiss the case and sort of make me go away. They just tend to leave me alone now, because I start sort of doing this in front of people, and the police walk away. And, you know, if I go to court, then I tend to walk out of the court, and, you know, they just kind of leave me alone now. And so I try to lead by example in all the things that I do. But, you know, people have to realize that all the problems that we face, all of this destruction that's happening to our planet, all the devastation that's been done to the earth via industries such as coal seam gas mining and stuff, they only get away with it because they say, oh, it's all legal. What they're doing is perfectly legal. What is legal? Legal is that which is legislated. And all legislation is rules put on pieces of paper by politicians who presume they have the power to replace natural law with their will. That's all it is.
Exactly.
You know? So we have to realize that we stand in natural law if we choose to do so. But we have to choose to do so. You know, if you do it by yourself, often you'll get in deep trouble. If you don't really feel free in yourself and you don't know how to talk to these people, you'll get in trouble. So you need the community. You need the whole community to stand up against something. When they come and tell you you can't grow organic food, or you can't do this, or you can't pass a tomato to your neighbors, the whole community needs to stand up and say, hey, no, you're public servants. We didn't employ you to write stuff that tells me we can't pass a tomato to our neighbors. That isn't what we employ you to do, because you're public servants. You're not our rulers. You're our servants. We rule you. And we have the power to do that because we have a united community. But we're not going to do it without that united community. So we've got to break down those barriers and respect each other.
So how do we unite the community?
Yeah, but see, what happened to me after the 60s and 70s, because I opened my mouth and I turned against the psychotics, there have been a half a dozen instances in the last 30 years when I got a little phone call that said, you know, we heard you say so-and-so, or we saw you printed so-and-so on the net, and we would appreciate it if you would shut the hell up.
Yeah, well, thank you for the internet now. See, now you need to record those sorts of things and post them online as well, you know.
I don't do that.
That's the first thing I'd do. You know, I'd be recording every call, and I'd be, if I was ever rung up by any government authority that said anything like that to me, I'd be posting it on the internet straight away.
The problem is people are too afraid to lose what little they have. So they have no voice. They're looking for a leader.
Right.
I was going to say, Max, what are some of the most effective responses that you can throw to the courts or use when intimidated by authoritative figures? I mean, is there like a mud map for people where they can get like bullet points of what you can actually say to defend yourself in those situations? Like if people were confident that these kinds of automatic responses work for other people, if there's like testimonials from successful parties where if you say this response or say this, and if you present this, then that would probably make people less fearful of actually questioning authority when they are set upon. Like if people knew there were a set of legal responses they could use that would automatically have the authorities back off and not follow through with any charges, then, you know, they probably might be a little bit, you know, more confident.
Well, yeah, you would have had charges against you to be in court for the, to begin with. So, but I've been dealing with police officers in every country. You'll find that there's slavery legislation. There's always legislation that deals with slavery, and there's always legislation that deals with piracy. Only two things that are illegal in every country on earth, and that is slavery and piracy. So slavery, like I can really only speak for Australia, but in Australia, slavery is illegal. And so therefore, nobody can make any demands of me because that's called slavery. When a police officer talks to you in Australia, he will always be requesting that you do things, but you just do them. You don't realize it's actually a request, and you have a choice as to whether to acquiesce to a request. You know, so rather than go through that, they get a little bit tricky and they give you a direction. I'm directing you to exit the vehicle. I'm directing you to move away from this protest site, you know, and nobody ever questions the use of the word direction. Oh, yeah, okay, I'm going to give you a direction. I'm going to direct you to move off the road. If you don't move off the road, you will be arrested. And everyone just moves off the road. You know, well, I'll put my hand up and say, well, excuse me, I'm not familiar with your use of the word direction. How can you give me a direction? What direction are you giving me? Is it north, south, east, west? How can you give me a direction? You know? No, I'm directing you to move off the road. I say, well, you're directing me. I don't understand what you mean. I wasn't aware that I was in a play. If you feel that we are directing the scene here and you're the director, is that what's going on? You know? And I kind of look at you and I say, look, forgive me, I'm sorry, I'm a little bit confused, but it sounds like you are requesting that I perform an action. Is that you're requesting that I move off the road? He says, yes, that's what I am. I say, okay, you're requesting that I move off the road. Is it a request or is it a demand? And I'll say, well, it's a request. And I say, okay, well, if it's a request, obviously I have a choice, and after careful consideration, I've decided that I won't be acquiescing to your request. Thank you for the offer. And then another cop will usually pipe in and say, okay, it's a demand, mate. You know, and say, I demand. Are you a slave trader? No, I'm a member of the Queensland Police Department. I say, well, are you a public servant? He says, no, I'm a member of the Queensland Police Department. Oh, okay. Are you representing the Crown? Yes, I'm representing the Crown. I say, okay, well, if the Crown chooses to exercise a right of ownership over me through you and your enforcement of one of their statutes, I need you to know that I will be seeking damages against you, the man within the uniform, not your police station, not the Crown, not anybody else, but you. So I'm going to need your name and badge number, so I can lodge this complaint, because I'll be seeking damages against you in the High Court for breaches of sections 268 and 270 of the Australian Criminal Code, which explicitly states that no individual may be compelled by another individual to perform any task or action against their will, because that's called slavery, and slavery is illegal in Australia. So if you are going to make a demand of me, then I will need your name and badge number, because you're not able to make demands of me. You know? And they kind of look at you like that, you know. And you can even get into it a little bit further. I mean, it depends on the situation you're in. But, you know, when you ask them if they're a public servant, they say, no, I'm a member of the, you know, New South Wales Police Department. So, okay. And so that's indicated to me that the New South Wales Police Department is not a department of government, but is a private company that contracts the government. So we must be operating in corporate law here. So it sounds like you're attempting to enforce a contract. You know, if I don't comply with your wishes, are you going to arrest me or hurt me or anything like that? You know, yes, we will arrest you. So, okay, are you prepared to use violence to arrest me? If we have to, you know, so, okay, well, according to the definition of terrorism, terrorism is defined in the Oxford English Dictionary, and I'm speaking English here. I don't know whether you're speaking legalese, but I'm speaking English. And according to the Oxford English Dictionary, terrorism is defined as violence or the threat of violence carried out against civilians as a means of coercion, often for political reasons. That's the dictionary definition. So what I'm hearing here is that you are attempting to enforce a right of ownership in order to enforce a non-existent contract, and you're prepared to use terrorism in order to do so. That's what I'm seeing in natural law, okay? And that's what I'm seeing actually in your law, in your legislation as well, because according to the slavery clause, according to the definition of terrorism, according to corporate law, this is what's going on. So I'm going to need your name and badge number, and I'll be leaving here. I mean, I'll get off the road. Hey, I'll get off the road if you want to see my ID and you want to, I'll get off the road if you're going to threaten me with terrorism if I don't. But I'll let you know that I'm going to be going home. I'm going to be contacting Ethical Standards and the Australian Attorney General. And I'm also going to be contacting the Police Insurance Ombudsman. I'm going to be informing them of your actions, and I'll be seeing you in the High Court.
The cops must really love you.
Well, they're not very happy with me. But when you do this sort of stuff, you can do it if you're in a crowd of people. Like if I'm out in the park or I'm in a hotel and a police officer comes up and asks for my identification, that's exactly what I'll do. If I've got people around me, I'll go through that whole trip, yeah. You know. But if I'm on the side of the road, I'm driving my car and I get pulled up by a police officer and wants to see my license and registration and there's two or three of them, I'm not going to start doing this because they'll just tase me and say that I did whatever, throw me in, and take me in the paddy wagon and beat me up in the cell because they can. So you've got to really, you know, choose what you're doing. First thing I'll say if a police officer comes up to me and I'm in a public place, the first thing I say to them is, are you arresting me? And I say, no, we're just, we need to see some ID. I say, really? Is there a controversy here? But you can sort of get in before they say, so you're arresting me. They go, no. So, okay, is there a controversy here that I'm involved in that would indicate that I require the assistance of the police service? I don't like it when you call them the police service. So I always call them the police service. And I say, no, we just need to see some ID. I say, really? I'm pretty sure my father fought in a world war to protect me from ever having to show identification to a police officer on demand when I'm just in a public place in quiet enjoyment. You know, so look, you know, just doing my job, mate. Oh, really? Your job? Isn't your job apprehending criminals? Have you approached me under the presumption that I'm a criminal then? Because I take offense to that, you know. And I just need to see some ID. Then you go through the, okay, well, is this a request or a demand? And you go right through from there. And what you'll find is they'll always say it's a request. Even when they want to search your car, now, they say to you, mind if we look through your trunk, mate? They never say, you know, get out of the car. We're going to search your vehicle. They ask, do you mind if I blah, blah? And you go, no, it's all good, you know. Because they have to, it's a request. They can't demand that you do anything. But what they're actually doing in that situation, that's called piracy, because they are stopping your vessel, they're boarding your vessel, and they're looking through your cargo. That's called piracy, okay? And the only way they get away with it is because you comply to the request. The first thing you should do when a police officer pulls you up is get out of your car and lock the doors. They don't like that. But that's the first thing you should do is get out of your car and lock the doors. And if they say we want to search your vehicle, you say to them, is there a law that requires me to submit to a search of your vehicle? If there is, I'd like you to state it for me now. I'd like to hear the wording of the law, please. And if there isn't, then I won't be consenting to any searches today. Thank you for the offer. You know, and always ask them for the wording of the law. And I've had people ask me for ID, and I said, is there a law that requires that I show you ID? And I go, yeah, it's the law, mate. I say, really? Can I hear the law, please? Can you tell me the wording of the law? And I say, well, I don't know the actual wording. And I say, oh, really? So you're out here enforcing a law, and you don't even know what wording of that law is.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And so I need to know if this is a request or a demand, and then I can go through and tell them about the slavery clause and say, and that is the actual wording of the law. So it would appear that I know a little bit more about the law than you do in some instances, you know. I've even said to them, it doesn't matter if you're in fancy dress. I mean, I've even said that to people when I've been in public. I've said to police officers, you know, I'm a police officer, you've got to respect me, right? I said, look, mate, you're just a man in fancy dress. I know what my law is. I mean, just because you've got some outfit on doesn't mean I have to comply to your demands. I mean, you could be Ronald McDonald for all I know, you know. He's just a guy in fancy dress as well. And, but yeah, I mean, you've got to be careful what you say to them.
Oh, you definitely have to, because like at one point they could say, well, are you calling me a clown? No. The Ronald McDonald reference was just a uniform thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've got stuff as well. If you make a statement, you know, if you say to a cop, you don't care. Oh, you don't care what goes on here. And he says, oh, really? How can you know what I'm thinking? Sounds like you're making a statement. Are you a psychiatrist? Have we done any, you know, because it sounds like you're making a statement, so I don't think you're sane. I can take you off for psychiatric evaluation. You know what I mean? This is what I've had, you know, this is what they do in Western Australia. If you make a statement to a cop and you tell a cop that he doesn't care, he can actually take you away for psychiatric evaluation. You know, because I said that to a cop while I was over there. Oh, you don't even care what's going on here. And he said, it sounds like you're making a statement. I said, well, what I'm doing is I'm making a statement based on, you know, the only logical conclusion I can come to based on an observation of your actions. He went, oh, okay, and walked away, you know. So you've got to be really careful how you talk to these people. And again, you know, if you're in a situation where you're by yourself and you're vulnerable, yeah, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir, have a look at my license, have a look at the registration. I don't care. I'm not smuggling drugs in the car. I don't have a teenage girl in the trunk. You know, I'm not doing anything wrong. So, you know, just get it over and done with quickly so I can be on my way.
Pick your fights.
Pick your stances. And if you're going to be sort of belligerent to these people, make sure you've got a little bit of backup there around you, you know.
Yeah.
But always be polite. Always be polite and always talk to the man within the uniform. Don't talk to the uniform. Talk to the man within it.
Max, did you see what the United States Supreme Court did 2 weeks ago?
In what instance?
They have authorized the legal strip search of any person arrested in the U.S.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, more totalitarian methods. See, the US is gone. America's gone. I said that a few weeks ago on a show. The United States that we all know and love, it doesn't exist anymore.
No.
Nope. It's gone. It won't return until the people demand its return.
You know what I compare my fellow citizenry to is the joke I heard about Kiwis when I was living on the Gold Coast. Why do Kiwis herd their sheep toward the cliffs at night?
Yeah.
Because they push back harder. That's what this citizenry has become. They they get pushed to the cliffs every night. No comment, mates?
No, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. But I mean, America's gone. It's not there anymore, unfortunately. It's gone.
And it'll be gone till we take it back.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you could do it peacefully. You really could, but you've got to have a united community. That's the only way to do it.
Civil
disobedience with a united community. Say, hey, guys, enough is enough. We've just realized, we've just woken up and remembered that we actually employ you to do exactly the opposite of what you're doing.
Exactly.
And so, you know, it's just got to stop. Yeah, but, you know, the people they're trained to give their power away, and they're trained to live only for themselves. You know, as long as their little place is okay, I'm safe here in my apartment. I've got my TV. I've got my toaster. You know, I get enough income there that I can just scrape by. I don't need any more trouble. Just give me my peace at the end of the day so I can relax in front of the television and get programmed for tomorrow. You know?
Are on the money.
Yeah, I mean, and we're all divided from each other. You know, you're taught by the television. Oh, don't go outside. There's all these criminals out there. Everyone's out to get you, you know. Don't want to know about your neighbors. They look different. They think differently. They've got different political views than you. Taught to be divided and squabble about everything. And it's all completely illusionary. You know, that's why people get packed into cities, I believe, because the more people you squeeze together in a concentrated area, the more disconnected from each other they become. It's funny though. You know, you'll go out in the country, you have guys who live 2 or 3 miles apart, and they know each other. They watch out for each other. Right. And but in the city, the guy in the apartment, you got an apartment building with 500 families in it. None of them know each other. They don't even want to walk out in the hallway if they hear someone else out in the hallway because they may have to deal with them, you know? So it's amazing how it's done.
Timmer.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I don't know about Chicago, but I've been in New York a couple dozen times. You can walk any place in any one of the 5 boroughs and nobody makes eye contact.
That's exactly how it is here.
Where I live, you walk down the street, you say hi to everybody, they say hi back. Half the time you stop and have a BS session with a person you've never met before in your life. But I live in a town of 2,000.
That sounds like a community to me.
That's a community.
Now, I live in Des Moines, and it's very much like that here. It's still kind of a small town mentality in a medium city. Des Moines is kind of a weird place to be. I literally walk down the street waving at my neighbors, and I live in a lower working class neighborhood. Of course, I work part-time down at the liquor store at the corner, so I know everybody. I made it a point to get the job just for that. Well, it's just the point that I can walk down my crime-ridden street at 2 a.m. and not worry about getting robbed. They're more likely to roll up and ask me what I'm doing or how I'm going than anything else. So it really is about getting to know your community, so I made it a point. I'm a local tattoo artist, retired right now, so I had a little shop here in the community. And then when I retired, I took a part-time job down at the liquor store just so I can kind of keep up with everybody. And it works out pretty well for me anyway. But if everybody could act like that, and I just tell everybody, just try smiling and saying hi to somebody for a change, you know what I mean? And it really just changes everybody's day.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you see someone in trouble in your community, go to their aid, you know?
Exactly. Well, yeah, we do kind of look out for each other down here.
Yeah, I mean, if we've got strong community, then we can accomplish miracles, you know? And that's one of the major things that's been done to us is the division of the community. No common unity anymore in community.
Exactly. But you got to start locally.
Absolutely.
You really do. The people directly around you.
If everybody led by example and was all that they could be all the time and saw everybody else around them as valid, that would rub off. And, you know, we just create waves. And that's the way it has to be done, you know.
Of course, I'm the crazy guy who sold his car 10 years ago and he walks everywhere. You meet a lot more people when you walk. I just, you know, got done with the whole, just kind of me breaking away from the system a little bit. I got a video on my channel called Walking the Walk, kind of explains all that. Anyway. Go ahead, guys.
I was just going to say that the only way that you can even start some sort of community on a mass scale would be to have television canceled for a week or two.
Yeah.
Like, people have no sense of neighbors or, like Max was saying, there's just no community. Everybody's afraid of each other, and they're afraid of the police, they're afraid of the IRS, they're afraid of the government, all these things that surround you on a daily basis.
They're just afraid of difference. They like being stuck in routine. They like what they know. They don't want something new.
Comfort, yeah.
Comfort.
Well, it's part of the control matrix, the divide and conquer kind of thing.
Yeah, it is.
They program everybody that way. Since you're a kid, I mean, since all of us have been alive at least.
Yep, like-minded people. You have to be around like-minded people, even when you're at school.
Exactly. Well, when you put out that energy, they do tend to attract to you.
Yeah, but I don't want like-minded people. That's boring. That's like myself in the mirror. I want someone to argue with, someone that has a different opinion to me. Otherwise, I'm stagnant. I'm just, you know.
Well, believe me, nobody knows everything. There's just too much to know.
That's right. I only know that I know nothing.
Exactly. Well, there you go. That's a wise man would say that.
But anyway, so boiling it down, breaking it down to the lowest common denominator, the problem lies in the future education of our kids. Yes or no?
Very much so.
Yeah, very much. Absolutely.
So what do you change in the education system when it's run by the same people that run the governments?
It starts at home.
It starts at home, yeah. Don't even send your kids to that system.
No, homeschool. The smartest kids I know right now, and I'm 67 years old, the smartest kids I know in the neighborhood and the most open-minded kids I know that live within a mile of me are homeschooled.
I was going to say, Max has to go, so I was going to say if you had any last questions for Max, and it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show too, Max, by the way.
My pleasure, Mark.
I've really enjoyed it. It was a pleasure meeting you. When I get back down under, I'm definitely coming to Byron Bay and meet you in person.
Yeah, it'd be a pleasure, Dan.
Take care,
Thank you,
friend.
Max. It was an honor, for real.
Okay, guys, thanks very much for having me on. I'll catch you next time.
Not a worry, Max. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks,
okay,
Max.
Just send me a link when you get it posted, and I'll share it.
That'd be fantastic.
Okay, guys. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, thanks, Max.
I was going to say, with regards to the community side of things, I think that it's more down to your sphere of influence as well. So, for example, like Magic was saying that he got into working in retail, or call it working in retail, which is a but I mean, as in, like, I don't know necessarily the people that live in my immediate area, yeah, but like where I work and where, you know, my sphere of influence, I try to be as, you know, happy. Although I must admit, I get told all the time that I should smile more. which makes me the biggest hypocrite on the planet, because I'm always telling people, if you smile at another person, then that makes them feel better. And I get people all the time saying, you need to smile more. But I think it really doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be close to the people that live next to you. I think it's the people that you most interact with. I think that's a very important thing as well. Because, like, in the end of the day, you spend most of your time at work anyway, or at least some of us do. So, like, you're looking at the people that you're dealing with in your workplace, and that includes people outside when you go to lunch breaks, that type of thing. Is if you can actually just put on a persona of joy, you know what I mean? That you are that your life isn't shit and you're actually having a good time.
Mark, one of the first things I did when I moved back here,
yep,
from Mount Nathan, one of the first things I did when I moved into the place I'm in now and have been for the last 12 years, I walked around the neighborhood. If I saw somebody standing in their yard, I walked up, introduced myself, told them where I lived, who I was, struck up a conversation. And within the first year, I probably knocked on 50 to 60 doors within a half a mile circumference of where I live.
Yep.
And freak people out, but introduce myself. I'm new to the neighborhood. I want to know how things are going. I want to know what's happening, you know?
Can I tell you a story? 1979, my parents came from Argentina. We moved into our first house. My dad got a loan. He bought a nice house in the suburbs in Stafford, and nobody came out. There's different customs, obviously, around the world, and Argentina's a very specific custom when people move in. So what I remember, I think I was in grade 3 or 4, our front door neighbors moved in, our new neighbors across the road, and my mum baked a cake, and my dad made us all go across and present ourselves and welcome the new neighbors. The police got called while we were at the front door. It was just like, so when we got home, my dad just said, all right, That custom doesn't work here.
That's what I mean. 9 out of 10 people are just too afraid.
Yeah.
When I moved into the apartment complex I'm in right now and have been, one of the first things I did, and I was the new guy, okay? The other people had lived in the complex for some time. I'm a baker. I'm a cook. I've been all my life. The first thing I did when I moved here, I baked a loaf of bread and delivered it to every one of my neighbors here.
It's the little things.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
All you got to do is make the contact. And ever since then, when somebody new moves in, if it's a woman, I take her a potted plant or flowers. If it's a guy, I try to find out if he drinks at all. I take him a bottle of wine or take him a home-baked loaf of bread, whatever. That's how I get to know people.
I think at the end of the day, it all boils down to making an effort.
Making a conscious effort, yeah.
That's all it takes.
Sometimes I have to remind myself because, you know, in the morning I get up running late for work. I'm in a shitty mood. I get to work and I'm kind of rude to my coworkers. And then I realize, you know, hey, that's not you, you know. Yeah. People notice when you smile.
Exactly.
Well, they say a smile is worth $1 million and it costs nothing.
Well, Mark knows this.
It's contagious.
Exactly. That's true, too.
In 1989, I was in a head-on car wreck. I was in a coma for 32 days. I have artificial knee, ankle, hip, face.
You my transhuman
face,
you.
My face is 85% titanium. I mean, it just fucked me up. Before that, I have to admit, I was a total dickhead. I was. I was the asshole essence of the earth. But I had a reawakening in 89. And what I've tried to do ever since is just put a little goodness in everyone's life every day.
I think that's that's universal law. It's the essence of life is to actually make as many people, you know, touch as many people as you can with a positive light.
I mean, when I lived on the Gold Coast and Mark and I first met, I don't think, Mark, can you ever remember a time when you saw me angry or stressed out?
I don't believe so.
No. I don't do stress. There's no future in it.
How about you, Magic? How do you deal with your... Because you must get so much... Like, you're in the thick of it. You know what I mean? Like, you're getting all the latest news coming
through. Yeah.
Not all of it's positive. So I was going to say, how do you actually deal with, you know, all this information when you get it?
You know, it does weigh heavy on me. It's because I put my face on it, you know?
Yeah.
You see my face reading the news when you get this bad news, and that does kind of weigh on me. I tried to walk away a few times. I don't know, something's telling me I got to keep doing it. So how do I deal with it? I've been in a loving, healthy relationship marriage for 21 years to a wonderful woman. I have two dogs that do nothing but love me all day. So I surround myself with love and friends and, you know, and I try not to stress them out on my videos. I don't push it on my Facebook and family and friends. They all know I make the videos, and if they choose to watch it, they choose to watch it. And so I'm not going to be that crazy Uncle Joe, you know what I mean? But they all kind of think I am. I don't know. I just kind of, you know, energies flow you the way you go, and I just stay positive, man.
You know what? You know what I suggest to people all the time, and it's so simple, and I never realized it before my accident, which was extraordinarily life-threatening. I was in hospital for 9 months. My psychiatrist, who helped me get out of that, and I needed one bad because I was messed up, guys. I was an athlete. I did all kinds of stuff before that, and about 90% of that I've had to give up. But one thing she told me that has stuck with me ever since, and she told me this on July 7th, 1990. Every day is a great day as long as your eyes open in the morning.
It's very true.
Because the first day they don't, you're fucked.
Now think about this. Everything happens for a reason. If that didn't happen to you back then, you wouldn't be where you are right now.
I wouldn't be where I'm at or who I am.
Well, the energies of the universe are very strange indeed, aren't they?
I have a calm about that. Okay. About everything happens for a reason. I got magic. I got hit by a car at age 16, full fracture of the skull, in coma for I don't know how long, whatever. What reason? I think sometimes reasons are the excuses that people make to do bad things.
Not necessarily. What did you learn from that?
I don't know. What did I know before I was 16? Like, how can I judge myself at 16? Like, I knew what the school taught me. I was a good student. I went to Argentina at the age of 16, learned Spanish in you know, a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What,
are, you,
does,
are, you, Andre, are you a better person now?
I wasn't a person at 16. I was still finding myself. I was still deciding who I wanted to be. I was either a priest or a politician at 16. And after the accident, I couldn't be a priest because my whole mind opened up to whole
so
thing.
So you were changed. Totally.
And you learned humility. Totally.
Thank Buddha, you're not a priest.
Well, I don't know. I'm nothing now. I'm nothing. Like, I studied to be a teacher, but I can't teach in the system. The system doesn't want people.
When you say you're nothing within a system that is flawed.
Well, I'm nothing. I'm struggling to maintain for my daughter. For myself and my daughter. Like, it's a struggle every month, you know? What do you do? Where do you work? What do you do 9 hours a day and then come home and put up with, as a single dad, you know, I have to have time for my daughter. I find working part-time gives me more time to be in a good mood with my kid.
Andre.
Yeah.
We haven't even met face-to-face and you are not nothing to me.
No, but you know what I mean. Like, I did 7 years of study to be something and I'm not allowed to be it because the system declares that I'm not.
Yeah, but karma says that's not what you were meant to be.
Yeah, you should have been a priest.
I think nature and the soul and our urges and that moment when you've worked your last second at that job you've had for however many years, that moment when you wake up and you go, what the fuck am I doing with my life? That everyone.
Should I do that every day?
Yeah, well, you know, you might get it more than once, but.
Do you guys know what a logistics consultant is? I was a logistics consultant. That's what I went to college for at the University of Arizona. I never went to work one day in my life that I didn't enjoy it because I found something early on that I loved and I did over and over again. And because I decided to become a consultant, I never worked for any company more than a year in 32 years. And all I did was go in and clean up messes and make everything better, take my contractual agreement in cash, and bug the hell out. The only reason I was able to move to Australia for a year is because I had a real good contract before that, made a shitload of money, and took a year off.
Well, that's right.
You got to like what you do.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. You got to find the thing that
you love. Well, if you don't love it, it's not worth doing.
Exactly.
No.
And I was going to say, Magic, with regards to your videos, I think one of the things that I love about them is that even though you're being dealt with the blind reality of what we're facing, having it delivered by you takes the edge off.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? Like coming from you, like it's not a Bill O'Reilly. You're not getting it from, you know, all these people who just you don't trust anymore.
Yeah.
It's coming from a face that you can trust.
I've been trying to do it without speculation, and that's what I find a lot of videos you get into. People start speculating, and they start ranting in this direction or that direction. This could happen or that could happen. And when I watch a news video, hey, I just want to know what's going on. So basically, I'm giving you exactly what I want to see when I see a news video. And that's why I don't get into, you know, I'll put up some artsy videos here or you know, like smoke of chocolate cake video now and again kind of thing, just to kind of throw it out there and let people know who I am. But when it comes to the climate change update, I just try to keep it as business as possible, especially, you know, there's so much information. I like to keep it around 10 minutes, and it's impossible sometimes.
Something happened last week, just in the last episode, that was hilarious. We had a guest on D. Smith, who was...
I love D.
And
they always see...
Yeah, that's the one. And she basically made the comment about, you know, that YouTube has all this awesome information, but then there's also, you know, you've got your funny videos. And she actually mentioned a funny squirrel video. And as soon as she said, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, she's been watching Magic. I saw that squirrel video. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And it's
bravery for nuts or something,
exactly,
bravery for peanuts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's good to break it up.
Would you agree? About 10 years ago, I quit watching news on cable or TV simply because it was no longer objective. It was subjective.
Well, I stopped watching it when the...
Everybody has a friggin' platform.
The Falkland Wars.
Well, it's called propaganda.
Yeah.
You're watching the machine.
Indoctrination.
When six companies own every media outlet in the world, what information are you going to get? You know what I'm saying?
That's it.
So that's why I don't take any monetary at all for my stuff. You're not going to find – the only time I got ads on any of my videos is because I'm using YouTube Audio Swap, so they can't try the copyright BS with me. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I kind of use the tools the beast gives me against it.
But would you agree that public news ceased being objective probably in the early 80s?
Probably 36, 37.
It was never good news. It was indoctrinated news.
Yeah, we're still – you got to understand the United States is still running under bankruptcy since the last Great Depression. We never got out of it.
No.
We've always had censors and editors.
I enjoy saying this. I don't hate to say it. You know what I'd like to see happen tomorrow?
Oh, no.
I'd like to see I'd like to see China call in the debt.
Call in the debt. I got to go, guys. Be back soon. See ya.
And China owns it. They called in the debt. We'd be screwed.
Yeah, well, China basically, like, I've heard stories that really kind of like, they're not shocking because, like, you know, just exactly what we're dealing with, but, like, the latest thing is that all the farmland in New Zealand was bought up by China, which means fracking will probably be the next thing on their list of things to watch out for.
Exactly.
And realistically, when you look at it, I use that word so often, realistically, I need to change it. When you look at what China did, she was very smart. You know what I mean? She was raped and pillaged for 150 years or more from the colonial invasion. Yep. And then Japan obviously had its go at her as well. So, like, she's been very, like, if you look at her as a human being, she's been, you know, raped and pillaged more often than you can poke a stick at. So she built up her army by basically creating a massive population. And you've got to hand it to them, you know what I mean? Like, as much as we can turn around and say, well, you know, they're doing bad human rights things or whatever it is, which is true. I'm not promoting that. I'm saying that to have 1.4 billion people within your borders and maintain that, like the logistical nightmare of that alone is enough to make you kind of go, wow, how do they do that?
Exactly.
So for them to have built up their army to protect themselves from any further invasions, they then had to implement a one-child policy because the population just got too big. But then they did one other thing and they turned all their people, well, not all their people, but a lot of their people into electronic slaves.
Right.
Making all of the products for all of the Western civilizations. And in doing so, they've literally, you know, cashed up big time to the point where they could literally buy it. And I've even heard that they're in the process of purchasing certain cities in America. So,
China owns us lock, stock, and barrel.
And how is that when in, you know, the 40s and the 50s we were so against communism?
The United States
has sudden, money talks.
Exactly. That's communism. Communism money became talks. Lucrative.
Communism today isn't communism from 40 years ago. They're as capitalistic as we are.
Exactly. They saw an object of all, just like every other government.
They saw an opportunity to buy the U.S. by loaning us money and taking on our debt, and now they own us. And I would laugh my ass off if they called in the debt tomorrow.
That would be World War III.
Washington would go bankrupt.
Are they going to march in and repossess this property?
Exactly.
Trust me, they could probably do it.
No, you're thinking old school. Now, when World War I happened, nobody believed the technology. And when World War II happened, all the old technology was nothing. So what do you think World War III is going to be? Them aircraft carriers and submarines aren't going to do nothing. Numbers will mean nothing. It is all going to come out from space. Now, you got to think about what's going on. You got the new X-35 up and running. Two of them, right?
Yeah,
that's the secret new shuttle, robot shuttle they got going up. And God knows what they're throwing up there right now. So as far as all this army and posturing and rattlesabering, I mean, once they start pushing the buttons, if they really take the gloves off, you know, it's going to be like nothing nobody's seen before.
Magic, I don't think they'll take the gloves off. I don't think they have the balls to take the gloves off. If China called in its debt, this country would be bankrupt totally.
I have to think it's a collaborative effort. Like, they know when the next world war is going to happen because they're planning it.
Exactly. Well, what happens when Fukushima crunches? And they already know the game's over. Yeah?
Yeah, I agree.
What a great thing to blame it on everybody but the nuclear industry. Oh, we just happened to have a war and those dirty North Koreans launched a nuke. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Blame it on everybody but them, but still they'll Agenda 21, you know what I mean?
Population control at its...
That's what it's always been about, yes.
Like, when you look at the BP spill and Fukushima and all these other events that have occurred, and that's and believe me, there's more than that, you know what I mean? Like, that's...
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Yep. Tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
But, like, the thing that amazes me is that it's kind of like the smoking patient, the one who smokes and smokes and smokes and gets told every day that they're going to get cancer, they're going to get cancer, they're going to get cancer, and then they get cancer, but they keep smoking, even to the point where they're smoking the cigarette through the hole in their throat. It seems to me that that's how this civilization as we know it is going to go, because we're not really looking at the ramifications of these ecological disasters that have happened over a space of less than a decade, and it's not getting any better. You know what I mean?
Nobody's seeing past the quick fix. It's a quick fix society. Everybody wants it fixed right now. They don't care about tomorrow. They want it fixed now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And also,
and that's what gets us in trouble.
Like, you're probably one of the very few people out there in the mainstream media who are actually promoting what's really going on. You know, the mainstream media, it astounds me. It's kind of like, this is my example of
how... It's kind of scary to refer to me as mainstream media.
No. I would never do that. No, I'm sorry. The mainstream, you could actually have a comet or a planet heading towards Earth, and the trajectory is it's going to hit Earth, but because it's no longer on the news that week, everyone's completely forgotten about it. You know what I mean? Even though that there's an impending disaster about to happen because the media aren't covering it, the mainstream media, then it's out of mind, out of sight, or out of sight, out of mind. That is the mentality. And then you look at it on a level of, do we manifest our reality? And if we do manifest our reality, is it a good thing that we're not being shown all these negative things? And then you think to yourself, well, no, because that means we're just being ill-informed and we're going to go by the wayside. You know?
Mark, before you get too far away from it, you mentioned smokers being told they're going to get cancer and smoking a cigarette out of the hole in their throat. One thing I can't tolerate is stupidity. I just can't. I can't deal with it, okay? About 2.5 weeks ago, my aunt, who has had emphysema for the past year and a half, decided it was too cold to go outside and smoke her cigarette, take her oxygen tank off, smoke a cigarette. So she sat at her kitchen table and lit up a cigarette and blew up the fucking house and killed herself.
Oh, my God.
That's how important a cigarette was to her.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
But see, that's it. I'm not sorry to hear that. Or Timmer, I'm not sorry to hear that. She's a fucking moron.
The Darwin Awards haven't been handed out this year, but I think your aunt's...
Exactly. No.
Better she's gone. Running.
Not many people know that pure oxygen is flammable.
How stupid can you be?
Well,
how old was she?
67. My age.
Well, one disturbing statistic that I was told is the fact that when planes crash, a high percentage of passengers survive the crash, but they actually die in the explosion because they go looking for their luggage.
Exactly. No, I've heard the same thing.
Yeah, that's the mentality that we're dealing with.
And yeah.
That's
they're going after the important shit. Lives. They want their luggage. If a fire started in my apartment tonight, you know what I would take out of this house?
The bottle of rum.
And me, and that's it.
That's it. Because you know, and that's a safety precaution because you know rum is flammable.
That's it.
That's it.
Screw the rest of it. I just sit on the driveway and watch the sucker burn to the ground.
And collect the insurance money.
And I think that's exactly what's going to happen very shortly, because I think with what's happening in the world on every level, we're seeing that exact definition. We're seeing it burn down around us. And unfortunately, it's one of those things where I think Max was saying the correct thing, and that is that the universe will make sure that you're in the right place at the right time if you are, you know, if you embrace the universe, if you let everything go. And you just realize that you are, you know, there's a lot of things that you cannot control on this planet. There's plenty of things that you can't control. So by having that mentality where you surrender to the universe to basically say, look, you know, anything could happen. You know what I mean? It's not a matter of what, or when. It's imminent. What's going to happen on this planet is clearly imminent.
And it's they're using the slow kill mechanism at the moment with regards to the chemtrails and the fluoridation, all that type of stuff. They're sterilizing us. But the thing is that the world is changing. You know what I mean? The world around us is she's growing up. Planet Earth is maturing. And just like every other human being, when we grow up, we lose puppy fat. We start to, you know, develop muscles. We start doing a whole range of different things. And she is getting stronger. I can feel that she is had enough. And really, it boils down to where you are when it happens. And the other thing is not to be afraid of death. Like
well, no, not at all.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, I have no fear of that. I look at it this way. Karma can be a bitch if you're a dick.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Karma can be a queen if you're okay.
Yeah, well, if you treat everything with the same... Whatever happened to that saying that you were told as a child? Treat other people, or in this case, treat everything the way that you want to be treated.
Exactly.
The same thing happened to Officer Friendly.
Yeah. He got a taser.
Yeah. Well, see, Mark, in grammar school, a policeman would come and address the class, and he would, you know, announce himself as Officer Friendly.
Well, I was going to say, I think it's probably time. I was going to say, not many of us got a word in edgewise with regards to the thing, but we're all absolutely blown away by what we heard.
He's an amazing storyteller.
Yes.
He can hold a crowd like there's no tomorrow. But, and I'd love to have you back, Magic. I would love to have you back because, unfortunately, Eric wasn't able to join us today and he's hanging out to meet. And also have Dee as well because she's also very keen to get in.
Yeah, very much so.
So,
well, I'll tell you what. You're the only person on the planet with my Skype number.
Okay, that's I'm
honored. I just did it for you, so.
And for that, thank you. I'm honored, privileged, and that's a nice thing. Skype, thank you.
I don't normally Skype. I uploaded Skype just for this.
Magic, it's been an absolute pleasure. Enjoyed it.
And remember, the universe comes at you like a wave. Don't let the wave take you away. Surf. Exactly. Good night, guys.
I smoke a joint every time.
Oh, sweet. They'd only legalize it. We'll see you later.
For me.
Timur, yeah. Take care, man.
All right, fellas. It was great talking to you.
Mark, as always, love you, mate.
You too, man.
All right, take care. Night, guys.
Thanks, Mark.